Larry, how did this project first come about?
Well, I've been involved with Borges since the early 1980s, writing their histories. First one was my first book, A History of Kalamazoo, that I co-authored with Peter Schmidt. We had a nice spread about Borges and that, and then I helped them with their 110th anniversary and their 100th anniversary and now the 125th anniversary.
So take us back to the beginning. This is 125 years ago, Kalamazoo in 1889. Help us visualize, what is Kalamazoo like in 1889?
Well, Kalamazoo in the 1880s was, the population was around 17,000, and it was a booming industrial mecca. All kinds of entrepreneurs were coming to Kalamazoo to manufacture buggies and windmills and railroad velocipedes, corsets, cigars. In the middle of the 1880s, W.E. Upjohn arrived and began producing his friable pill. It means you could push it down and it would turn into powder. And so lots of things were happening. It became a city in 1884. Before that, it had been a village. And it was also the celery city. A lot of these Dutch immigrants were coming in and buying up the muck land, and Kalamazoo had a reputation around the country as the celery city. So things were going pretty good for Kalamazoo, with one little problem. If you got sick, there was no hospital. I mean, if you were well-to-do, you might get on the Michigan Central train and go down to Battle Creek and check into Dr. John Harvey Kellogg's Battle Creek Sanitarium, where you could try out the healthful aspects of cornflakes or enemas. That's what they kind of specialized in. But for people in Kalamazoo, there was no hospital. There were hospitals in other cities in Kalamazoo, but you wonder why there was no hospital. Basically, the city fathers were tight-fisted. They did not want to spend the money to build a hospital. This is the same kind of people that, in the middle of the Great Depression of the 1930s, Kalamazoo was the only city of its size in the nation without indebtedness. So that was mainly it.
So that was their first priority, this remaining out of debt rather than health care?
Yeah, than offering a city service like that. But the man who would change all that arrived in Kalamazoo in 1883, Father Francis O'Brien. He'd been born in Monroe in 1851 and grew up, his parents were Irish immigrants, and he'd grown up to really love the Catholic Church. His mentor and friend, Bishop Caspar Borges, kind of backed him. And in 1883, he sent him to Kalamazoo to take over the parish. When he arrived, he found a mess. The church was crumbling. People had bad morale. And Kalamazoo had become a national scandal because a parish priest in 1881 by the name of Quinn had published a book. It was called A Substitution for Marriage. He was saying that the priests were treating the nuns like wives, and that was a scandal all over the nation. So he set to work and got the parish going better and got some funds to repair the church and other things. And then something happened that, you know, sometimes history is made by just seemingly non-related things, but can later become very, very important. In 1884, the state fair was held in Kalamazoo. In those days, it revolved around the different cities. And, you know, when the fair happens, there's a lot of hilarity and jollity and things like that. And carnies come into town, and it's a different place. Well, there was a lot of taverns in Kalamazoo in those days, and there was a lot of over-imbibing. And so the city police force was real busy escorting people that had over-imbibed to the city lockup. Well, they found a youth who was stumbling along the wooden sidewalks and assumed he was drunk and took him to jail. A couple hours later, the turnkey realized he was not drunk. He was deathly ill. They searched him and found no identification, but they did find a rosary in his pocket. So they summoned Father O'Brien, and there amidst the curses and the terrible smell and everything of that drunk tank, Father O'Brien administered the last rites to that youth. Later found out that he was the promising son of a very well-to-do family who was just chagrined to find out that their son had died in jail.
I can imagine.
Yeah, and it left a lasting imprint on Father O'Brien. He determined that this should not happen again, that someone sick should die in jail. He told a story to his friend, Bishop Borges, and in 1888, Bishop Bohr just sent Father O'Brien a check for $5,000, which he had inherited, and he said, do with this whatever you want, but I was really moved by that story about the youth dying in jail, and if you want to build a hospital with it, you have my blessing, but he said, be aware that it's going to be a hard uphill battle. So Father O'Brien announced the receipt of that check on Christmas Eve in 1888, and the next year, he put it as a down payment on an Italianate mansion on Portage and Lovell. That was going to be Borges Hospital. Well, his next step was to get someone to staff the hospital and do the work. He inquired all over the nation for some Sisters of St. Joseph, who were very skilled nursing sisters, and couldn't find any until finally he located a convent in Watertown, New York, that could spare 11 of the sisters. They arrived in Kalamazoo July 6, 1889, and set about converting that mansion into a hospital. They did everything, scrubbed the walls, painted everything. And December 9, 1889, Borges Hospital, named after Bishop Borges, opened. The next few years were tough financially, but gradually more and more people began coming to Borges. And they built additions, about five different additions, and grew. It became a 100-bed hospital by 1917. It was still too small to take care of all the sick people in Kalamazoo. And so they decided that they would build a new Borges out on Gull Road, and they did in 1917. Both hospitals stayed open until 1929, when the old Borges, as it was called, closed. The Upjohn Company bought that property, tore down the old hospital, and built one of their buildings. And that is the site of the new Homer Stryker Medical School. So kind of everything comes back around.
Yeah. I'm still thinking about those 11 sisters and what they must have felt like when they arrived in town. Hadn't somebody warned them that I think there was something about a letter that the Indians were going to carry them away when they arrived?
They encountered an old priest on their way to Kalamazoo, and he said, oh, Kalamazoo. He says, that's terrible. He said, the Indians will carry you off when you get there. So that had him worried. It didn't help that when they got to the Michigan Central Station, nobody was waiting there for them. They had, with their heavy luggage, they had to trudge down the hot streets of Kalamazoo until they found the hospital. The hospital
that was
going to be a hospital.
That's before GPS.
Yeah, right. Sure was.
And then there was, in that history, a devastating flu epidemic that hit not only Kalamazoo, but the country and even beyond that. Tell us a little more about that.
Oh, it was the influenza epidemic of 1917, 1918. It was just a terrible. It's kind of related to swine flu, but it was it killed people. It killed millions of people, millions of Americans and millions of people across the entire world. They call it the Spanish flu, even though it didn't start in Spain. And the hospital in Kalamazoo was inundated with sick people, especially the students at Western who were studying military. And because they were like in dorms, the flu spread quickly. But they survived. The Borges Hospital survived, and many of the people that were recuperating there also survived.
And people working there who were caring
exactly.
for the patients, yeah.
The nurses really had a hard time because there were so many sick people that they had beds in the halls.
And Dr. Homer Stryker, you mentioned him a little earlier.
Yeah.
Talk about his role in Borges and some of the state-of-art technology that he brought into being.
Right. Well, he was a veteran of World War One, and then he grew up in Calhoun County, and he got his medical training in the 1930s, advanced medical training, and he settled in Kalamazoo. And one of the sisters in charge at Borges Hospital, knew that he was an inventor, and so they allotted him space in the basement of the hospital to do his inventions, providing that if he did invent something good, he would let them benefit from it as well. And so Dr. Homer Stryker invented this amazing oscillating cast-cutting saw. He invented the rubber heel for a walking cast. Invented the circle electric bed, which allowed people to be moved around without having to take them out of bed. all kinds of amazing inventions. And it started there in the basement of Borges.
And help us visualize also this early hospital, what it was like. When I was reading your book, I was interested in the description of private rooms versus the wards. And one of the things that occurred to me is it seemed like it was just so possible to have all kinds of infections when some of these private rooms were described as very much like bedrooms at home. I wondered about the sanitary conditions.
Yeah, well, doctors didn't really know as much about that back in those days. And if you see pictures of the private rooms, you know, there's like a buffet with all kinds of knickknacks on it, and there's pictures on the wall and all kinds of things like that. But, you know, they were very, very cheap back then. Father O'Brien came up with a form of insurance for $5 a year, for the entire year. If you got sick, you had the use of Borges Hospital. For $10 a year, you had a private room in Borges Hospital if it was needed.
And it seemed like for many years, the idea of providing health care free of cost to those who couldn't pay seemed very important.
Oh, yeah. They accepted what they called charity cases. And people of any religion, of any ethnic background, were welcome at Borges. You know, there's this idea of the open arms. If you look at what was called the New Borges out on Gull Road, the way it is shaped, the wings, as it's facing Gull Road, it looks like open arms welcoming anybody that needs help. And that was deliberately done.
I didn't realize that was deliberately done that way.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
We think it was.
Now, mention to us the major points of growth in technology. What kind of things have we seen over 125 years?
Well, we've seen the X-ray machine. They didn't have that back in 1889. We've seen all sorts of things like iron lungs, which there was a polio epidemic in which people were paralyzed, couldn't breathe at night. They'd have to put them in an iron lung. We've seen so many new techniques of heart surgery that started at Borges Hospital. It's just a revolutionary. You know, there's a saying, the good old days. Well, the good old days back in the 1880s were terrible. To prove that, all you have to do is to walk into a cemetery and see one after one of the graves of these children and families. The whole family would die from infectious diseases. So it's been revolutionized.
And then there was a change from general practitioners to specialists. How
right.
And why did that happen?
Well, they made the decision in the 1970s and 1980s to recruit specialists because they felt that was what Kalamazoo needed. And so they looked all over the country and picked out certain people that specialized in heart surgery or different things like that and invited them to come to Borges, and so it really developed along those lines.
Bronson enters the picture.
Yeah, that was, I think, 1905, about that. there were some doctors that weren't happy with Borges, and so they started a private hospital, which later became Bronson Hospital, named after Titus Bronson, the founder of Kalamazoo. And, you know, there's no way around it. There's rivalry between the two hospitals, but they both have their specialties, and so it really is good for the Kalamazoo community to have so much medical care available.
And then there's the centennial celebration 25 years ago, and there were some celebrities present.
Yeah, Patricia O'Neill, the actress, came, and Everett Koop, the medical director of the nation, he came, and there was a lot of big names in Kalamazoo at that time.
And how does that compare with other plans for a 125th celebration of any kind?
Well, they're celebrating the whole year, and I've been doing a series of talks, luncheon talks, about the history of Borges with Sister Sue, who was the only current Sister of St. Joseph full-time at Borges right now. So
I've met her. She's a wonderful person.
She sure is. It was a pleasure to work with her. And so the whole year we're celebrating, and my book will be available at Borges Hospital at the gift shop.
And it's a wonderful book. I really enjoy the visuals. They're fascinating. All along the margins, there's all kinds of photographs. And you know, you think maybe reading about healthcare may not be the most interesting thing, but this is a very readable, enjoyable book, not just about the history of Borges, but the history of Kalamazoo. It gives you a whole different perspective on that.
Well, thank you.
We didn't touch on the School of Nursing, Larry, when you mentioned Sister Sue, that I thought about that. Tell us how that grew out of Borges.
Father O'Brien had a sister who was also a sister. she was a nun, but it was his sister, Sister Raphael O'Brien. And she became a doctor, and she moved to Kalamazoo to assist her brother. And she realized that there was a need for a training school for these sisters because, you know, they didn't really have any formal training in medicine. And so she started up what they called St. Camilla's School of Nursing. And it existed for, 70 or 80 years and turned out many, many nurses for Kalamazoo.
And what happened to it?
It closed eventually. It was located out at Nazareth. And it eventually closed. I don't know exactly why, but, you know, Nazareth Academy closed as well. It was part of that.
And what kind of challenges is Borges looking at today, tomorrow? Do they have plans for the next 100 years?
Well, I'm sure they do. And, of course, the biggest thing now is keeping the cost of treatment down. That's a national goal because things are expensive and that has to be combated. And then with President Obama's medical solutions, we're hoping that things can be better for people that don't have the insurance that they formerly didn't have, now have.
And maybe as we bring this to a conclusion, you can tell us a little bit more about the research process for you. I always find that interesting. How did you dig into all of this? How long did it take you to put the book together?
This was actually a three-year project, and I start by totally immersing myself in every available source that I could locate. I become like a walking encyclopedia of the history of whatever project I'm on. I don't retain that forever, but once I feel that I found all the information I can from books and from periodicals and from newspapers and photographs and you name it, then I kind of make an outline and work with that. I have all these possible sources written on slips of paper, and I form them on a table into a storyboard and try to get each topic to blend into another topic. That's the way I've worked, and it's worked so far, and this is my 22nd book.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And did you have some people to interview? Were there some particularly interesting personalities?
Oh, yes. I can think of a couple. Dr. Russell Mone, retired physician, and Dr. Roland Springate, and I interviewed many of the older Sisters of St. Joseph, and Betty Upjohn. I interviewed a lot of people. And, of course, when you have an oral history interview, you're getting things that were never really committed to paper. And so this adds to it, and you get human interest stories. And so I find the oral history source is an excellent way of fleshing out a history.
Well, thank you, Larry. And are you doing any readings coming up?
Nothing is scheduled right now, but it may be.